This evening, we're going to be continuing our discussion of Old Testament principles. You are aware, we started a new study going through the Old Testament together, and we discuss those things in our morning Bible class on Sundays, and I will preach a sermon from that section of Scripture every Sunday night. And tonight, we're going to be dealing with Moses and the things that have occurred so far in our reading of Exodus chapters 1 through 9. Now, we're not going to dig into the questions there. I hope that you have done your homework. Unfortunately, I didn't ask you to turn in your homework, so I can't check it and keep you after school if you didn't. But the fact of the matter is, we want everybody to participate with us in reading our Bible study together. As we do this over the course of the next couple of years, we're going to have a wealth of information, and I think it will help us all to grow and mature as we study God's Word. What we're going to do tonight is talk about Moses in particular. We're going to be asking the question, what's that in your hand? And that's not my question. That was a question God asks Moses. The Israelites had come into Egypt with 70 members of their family. Jacob's family, 70 members. That's how many people came down. Later on in our study, we're going to get to see them prepare to leave and actually leave Egypt and make their journey through the wilderness to the promised land. And we're going to see a group that's estimated to be somewhere around 3+ million people. They came down with 70. They're going to leave with about 3 million. And this is a time period of a little over about 300 years, if you read the introduction to the book of Exodus. Heavy burdens were placed on all these people. In Exodus 1, verses 5 through 7, you see that. They set up taskmasters over them. They made them to make brick. They made them to be the labor force. And most of that is due to the fact that there arose a Pharaoh who did not know Joseph. 300 years have passed. They didn't know Joseph. You know what? Even with our modern technology, most people don't know people from 300 years ago either. With our technology, you don't know people from 200 years ago or 100 years ago. You see, when time passes, usually we forget those things. We stop thinking. That's why so often you'll hear people say, people who do not study history are doomed to repeat it. Why? Because somebody else has already been there and done that and bought the t-shirt, as the saying goes. We've been there and done that. Well, they forget about who Joseph is and what he had done in saving the entire world. And so they made them serve with harshness and bondage. But no matter what the Egyptians tried to do, Israel grew because of God's blessing. That's chapter 1 and verse 12. In the process of time, a Levite is born by the name of Moses. And his parents, we haven't gotten to it yet, but in your reading, you'll see their names are Amram and Jochebed. But when they are going to have a child, and they understand the Pharaoh's order to the midwives is to kill all the baby boys, when that doesn't work, he tells them to throw them into the river, which in effect is to kill them as well. And yet they don't obey. They don't follow those things. You know, if we were going to go back and look at our questions, there's a question there about what the midwives did. If you read that section of Scripture, you'll notice that when they did what was right and they didn't kill the babies and they stood up to those who were oppressive, God blessed them. Two verses later, it says that God blessed them for their doing what's right. So oftentimes today we think, well, if I do what's right, it's going to cost me something. No. If you do what's right, it's going to bless you from God. And so they were afraid, and so they hid their son. And that baby's going to grow, and he's going to mature. Chapter 2, verse 2, we see he was hidden for 3 months. Now, it says he's beautiful. That doesn't mean he's, you know, the most handsome baby ever been born. We're going to put him on the face of Gerber baby food or something. That's not what that... But the idea is this baby is born, and he's beautiful. How many babies do you know that are born that aren't beautiful? You know, Bill Cosby used to tell the joke... about his son being born, and when he popped out, he said, he looked like a lizard, you know, newborn baby. But to mom and dad, what do they look like? Beautiful, beautiful. But Moses was something special. So they hid him for 3 months, and when that wasn't possible to do anymore, they put him in the ark of bulrushes, and they set him in the river. Pharaoh's daughter, verse 5, is going to come down to bathe and to wash. They didn't have indoor plumbing and running water and electricity and a water heater. I'm glad we have those today. I don't know about you. But the fact of the matter is, they went down to bathe and they saw this basket and they opened it, and inside they found the baby. And sitting there watching, hiding in the bank is Miriam, who's his older sister, Moses' older sister. And so she asks Pharaoh's daughter, "Do you want me to find a nurse to take care of this child? The baby would need a nurse. It's going to need someone to feed it." Pharaoh's daughter had not had a baby. She wasn't going to be able to get this done. And so Miriam is able to go get Moses' own mother, Jochebed, to be his nurse. She would raise him until he's weaned, and then he's delivered to Pharaoh's house. And then that's when we see his name, Moses, which means drawn out. He was drawn out of the river. He is going to be a great man and a great leader, but he's raised in Pharaoh's house as Pharaoh's daughter's son, with all the privileges that come with that, and we'll talk about that more in a minute. You read down to verse 11, and the Bible shifts from baby Moses to adult Moses. Moses has been around about 40 years now. 40 years, that passed quickly, didn't it? 40 years, and he is out one day. He sees an Egyptian beating one of his Hebrew brethren. How did he know they were Hebrew brethren? Well, first of all, Pharaoh's daughter would have had some inclination because they found the baby. But more than that, he was raised in Jochebed and Amram's house. She nursed him and fed him and took care of him until he's weaned. And there was probably continual relationship between them over the course of time. But he sees him beating one of his Hebrew brethren. And he did some things that shows you that he knew it was wrong. He looked around both sides to make sure nobody was coming. And then he killed the man, and then he hit him in the sand. He had taken matters into his own hands to stop this when, by the way, the government had the right to do it. I'm not suggesting it's the right thing to do. I'm saying they had the authority to do it. And they did it, but he tried to stop it. And so he hides this man in the sand. Well, the next day, we see that he goes out and finds two Hebrew men fighting with each other this time. And he tries to stop them. And they basically said the same thing that you said when you were a kid, and probably your kid said to you, and so on and so forth. They basically said, "Who made you the boss?" That's basically what he literally said is in verse 14 of chapter 2. "Who made you a prince and a judge over us? Do you intend to kill me as you killed the Egyptian?" Who made you the prince? Pharaoh. That's who made him the prince. Pharaoh's daughter. He has the authority of Pharaoh's house. He has the wealth, the education, the power. He had all those things. They just didn't want to hear it. But he's going to try to stop them. And when they stand up to him, he understands, listen, this thing is going to be known. A lot of times when we do things that we shouldn't, we try to hide it. You know good and well somebody's going to find out. You know good and well, especially if we go back to that kid's mentality, somebody's going to tell. Somebody's going to say something. In fact, I know some people who can't wait to tell. They love it. They're excited to go tell. Mom and dad drive up in the driveway, they're already at the front door. Well, Pharaoh does find out, and Pharaoh's angry. And he seeks to kill Moses. So Moses fled in fear. He thought he was going to deliver the people. He thought that he had it all figured out. But the problem was he hadn't prepared. And on top of that, God didn't tell him what to do. He was doing it on his own. You ever get in trouble by doing something on your own? You thought it was a good thing? You thought you were helping out? You thought that this was going to make a difference? And it blew up in your face? Well, I got news for you. Moses wasn't the first one that had that happen. And he certainly wasn't the last. That still happens in our day and time. So we get to chapter 3. Moses is tending his sheep. Now it's his father-in-law's sheep in particular. He is married now. His father-in-law is called Jethro in chapter 3. He's called Reuel in chapter 2. Same man. Most of us have multiple names too. Don't get all caught up in it. But he's taking care of his father-in-law's sheep. And he walks up on what has often been called the burning bush. It's burning, but it's not being consumed. And God speaks to him and tells him he's standing on holy ground. And he takes off his shoes and he approaches, and God begins to talk to him. Moses was told that God is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. As we've seen since Genesis chapter 3, God has been telling them of things that are yet to come. Since Genesis chapter 12, we've seen the promise that is yet to come. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and Joseph. And we see all these promises as parents hand it down from parent to child, teaching them who God is. Well, Moses is now learning this is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And the blessing is also laid out here, part of the plan. Verse 8, included in it for the first time is God's intention for them to go back to the promised land and take the land, and to take it from the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. Remember earlier when we studied Abraham, Abraham could not possess the land. He never did get the land. He lived in a tent his whole life. He was looking for a city whose builder and maker is God, we saw in Hebrews chapter 11. But now, the sin of the Amorites is complete, and God's ready to give the people the land. So God told Moses that he had heard the oppression of Israel. He's heard their affliction, and he has compassion on them, and he's ready to deliver them. So he told Moses to go bring God's people out of Egypt. In verse 11, we see Moses speak up for the first time, and he says this, "Who am I? Who am I?" Moses had gone from thinking, I'm somebody great. I'm Pharaoh's daughter's son. I'm from Pharaoh's house. I can deliver the Hebrews. I can stop the oppression. I can make a difference. I'm somebody. To now he's saying, who am I? Who am I? They're not going to listen to me. His dreams have been shattered. He ran away to Midian. He's been wandering in the wilderness for 40 years, hiding out. But God said, no, you're going to go back, and you're going to deliver the people. Moses is showing some humility here. God told him it wasn't about Moses. He told him that he would deliver his people. God would deliver his people. Now, God would be with him, but God is the one who's going to deliver the people. We saw that throughout the life of Joseph this morning in our Bible class. Every single turn, no matter how difficult it may have been, Joseph gave the credit to God, and God is saying, I'm the one who's going to deliver them. He would ask some more questions. You get down to verse 13, a couple of verses later. He says, who shall I say sent me? Who's sending me? By what authority? By what authority? The disciples were asked that on occasion. Jesus was asked that on occasion. Jesus asked the Pharisees and Sadducees about John the Baptist. By what authority? All of those things tie back to God being the one who has ultimate authority. Today we do what we do because of Christ's authority, Colossians 3 and verse 17. But who shall I say sent me? And so Moses realizes he's not the deliverer, it's God. And so God says, I am who I am, the great I am. There are seven I am statements in the book of John, and we'll study that in a couple of years. But the great I am is the one who's going to deliver them. And he explains how he'll deliver the people, give them the land of Canaan. They're going to go down to Pharaoh. They're going to speak to him. He is not going to let them go, but God's going to use it to punish Egypt for their wickedness. And ultimately, Pharaoh would kick them out. But when they go, they're not going to go empty-handed. They're going to talk to the people, and the people are going to give them everything they need. They're going to give them clothing. They're going to give them food. They're going to give them jewelry, both gold and jewels. They're going to give them the necessities of life, clothing. They're going to take care of them. In fact, the last verse of that chapter says that Israel would plunder Egypt. Now, they didn't do it by breaking in and stealing. The people of Egypt gave it to them willfully. They gave it to them, and they would walk out with everything. They went from slaves to being blessed on that day because they obeyed God and they followed his plan. Now, another question is asked in chapter 4 and verse 1. He says, well, what if they don't believe me? Now, can you see this? This is like children again, right? Go tell your brother and sister to clean their room. Oh, who am I going to tell them said that? You tell them dad said that, and if I have to come down there, somebody's getting busted. Well, what if they don't believe me? You ever had that kind of conversation? I think most of y'all need to nod your head yes, because I already know you had that conversation. But the fact is, what if they don't believe me? God's going to answer the question. What if they won't listen to me? God's going to answer the question. You know what? Sometimes we do this still today. I'm talking about this in children because it's easy for us to understand. But you know what? Sometimes when God has told us to go and preach the gospel in all the world, you know what we do? We say, well, what if they don't believe me? When you're asking the question, you've taken the onus of responsibility and put it on your shoulders. We're not trying to have people believe us. We're trying to have them believe God. We're trying to get them to see what the Bible says. What if they won't listen to me? Listen, our job is not to be soil examiners. Do you remember our study of the parable of the soils? Four different soils. Today, so many people say, well, I'm not going to tell them because they might not listen. I want to go talk to him because I think he'll hear. That's not what the sower went out to do. The sower went out to sow. Remember the question I asked? What else would he do? He's a sower. That's his job. He's going to go out to sow. And as he sowed it, the good, the noble, the honest heart would receive the seed into his heart, and it would produce a harvest, 30, 60, or 100 fold. He would be saved because he heard and believed the gospel. Our job is to tell the gospel, not to pick who we think will hear it. We're to go and tell. Moses says, what if they don't believe me? What if they don't listen? I think here we are, what, 3,400 years later? And I think people still ask this question. What if I talk to my neighbor and he doesn't listen? What if I talk to my family member and they don't care? That's not the job. The job isn't to worry about that. The job is to preach the gospel. The job for Moses was to go be the spokesman for God and tell him what Pharaoh needed to hear. Pharaoh rejected it. Did God still save his people? Yes, he did. See, if people reject it, we need to have the attitude of Samuel when he went before God and was torn up because the people wanted a king. God told Samuel, listen, they're not rejecting you. They're rejecting me. They're going to get a king and they're not going to like it because kings do things that people don't like. Taxes, oppression, send your kids to war, and so on and so forth. And that's exactly what happened. You see, sometimes we ask this question, what if they don't believe me? What if they won't listen? It's not about us. It's about God and making sure we tell his message. So part of the reason Moses is concerned is because in the past he's tried. What did they do? They mocked him. They didn't want to hear him. Who made you the boss over me? Guess what's going to happen when he goes to Israel? At some point, they're going to accept it. But when things go south, you know what they're going to do? They're going to mock him again. But it's not about Moses. It's about God. And it's about God's message. In fact, they're going to mock him and they're going to say, the Lord has not appeared to you. God didn't tell you anything. You're just trying to be the boss. That's kind of the approach that they take. Why should it be any different this time? Well, the difference this time is God. So we get down to chapter 4 and verse 2, and it says, so the Lord said to him, what is that in your hand? Moses is going to answer. He says, it's a rod. It's this rod that he used to tend the sheep, to shepherd the flock, to herd the group of animals that belonged to his father-in-law. And so God told him to throw it on the ground. It became a snake. Moses jumps back. Probably most of us would jump back too. If you walk through the wilderness, if you're in the desert and you saw a snake, you probably understand that snake is not good for you to be around. And, we understand that out here in West Texas. If you see a rattlesnake, it's not a time to pick it up and play with it. I was showing Robin a picture earlier. Somebody posted a picture on Facebook. The guy sitting here holding his glove, and there is a baby cobra on the end of his fingers. That thing was standing up just like a big cobra does, but it's only like an inch or so off his hand. That baby cobra right there. That guy's crazy, I'm just telling you. That's crazy. And yet, he jumps back. I would too, probably. And then God told him to pick it up. I don't know what your fears are. I don't know what you think about. Some people love snakes, okay? Me, I would be asking God a question right there. He asked him all these other questions. Why not one more? Are you sure? Me, pick that up. But he did. He had him pick it up. He picked it up and it became a rod again. This was done to prove that the message was from God. Same thing we see in the New Testament, Mark 16 and verse 20. The miracles were done to confirm the word that it came from God, that the people were speaking the truth. This is what it's doing. It's proving. Moses wanted to know, who sent me? What shall I tell them? What if they don't listen? And God's saying, you perform these miracles and it will show that this is from God. Now, you've read ahead a little bit. You understand some of the plagues have already started. And the first few, the magicians can pull some of that stuff off. But it became clear very quickly that these weren't tricks of men. These were things that surely were done by God. And they were afraid. So it's going to prove that this message came from the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And so God then told Moses to put his hand in his bosom. When he pulled it out, it's described as being leprous like snow in verse 6. God told him to put it back in his bosom. When he pulled it back out, it was made clean. Now, who can heal leprosy? They couldn't do it in that day and time. Even with all the wisdom of the Egyptians, they couldn't do it at that time. They still weren't able to do it in the day of Jesus. Do you remember what they had to do as they walked around? They had to shout out, unclean, unclean, and stay away from people. But Moses, in a matter of seconds, went from clean to leprous to clean. And that's by the power of God. So God told Moses what to do. And he said, if they don't believe those two signs, you go down to the water, you pull up that water, and that water would become blood when you pour it on the ground. And he's going to teach them a lesson. And these people are going to go. So in chapter 4 and verse 10, Moses is going to begin a series of questions or arguments, or you might say excuses. The first one he says is the same thing sometimes we say. I don't know what to say. I'm not good at public speaking. I don't know how to talk to them about these things. He says, but I'm not eloquent. Neither before nor since you've spoken to your servant. I wasn't good at talking before you talked to me. I wasn't good at this, and I'm certainly not good at it now. That's what he's saying. And he says, but I'm slow of speech and of slow tongue. Later, he's going to use this same argument when he's going to be asked to go talk to Pharaoh, and he's going to talk about why he thinks Pharaoh won't listen. He'll say, I'm a man of uncircumcised lips, meaning I can't speak right. I can't talk effectively. I can't present things in a way I want to. I'm not good at speaking. And so God explains to him a very important principle. God is the one who made the mouth. God is the one who made the tongue. God would make sure the message was heard. Again, sometimes today we worry about being able to deliver the message. The truth is, what we need to deliver is the message. The message is what's being heard. The message is what's being taught. It's not the individual. It's not about me. It's not about you. It's about God. It's about His Word. And so he pleads with him. He makes another excuse or makes another request. He says, send somebody else. Send somebody else. You ever done that? Oh, would you mind teaching this Bible class? Oh, no, man, I don't know what to say. I'm not good with kids. I can't do that. You just need to send somebody else. What'd God say? Buddy, I made your mouth. Talk. He said, he got angry with him, hot with anger, the way it's described there. And he said, fine, we're going to send your brother Aaron. He's on his way out here to meet you. You use Aaron. You'll be as God to Pharaoh, and Aaron will be a prophet for you. That means he's going to be the spokesman. Aaron is going to do the speaking when they go before Pharaoh. That doesn't mean Moses wasn't in charge. It just meant that he was going to have his brother, his older brother, by 3 years, do the speaking. And so verse 17, in this verse in chapter 4, God tells him, once again, take the rod that's in your hand and you go do the signs that I told you to do. Take the rod in your hand. Moses and Aaron would go to the children of Israel. They would tell the people the message of God. They would carry out the signs that God told them. And the people at that time would believe, and they will bow their heads and worship God. Verse 31. He finally went and did what he was asked to do. But he asks him, what's in your hand? And at the end of the discussion, he says, take what's in your hand. Do you understand that before, Moses could have had anything he wanted in his hand? In Pharaoh's house, he could have had any money, any weaponry, any amount of soldiers, any kind of science of the day. He could have had all of that at his disposal. But now, what does he have? He has God. And he has his shepherd's rod that he's been using to shepherd sheep for 40 years in the wilderness. What's in your hand? Throughout the rest of our study in coming months, we're going to see what happens here. In coming weeks, he's going to use his rod to part the waters of the Red Sea and the Jordan. He's going to use it to bring forth water. He's going to use it falsely at one point to bring forth water. He's going to secure battles. As long as they held his hands up with that rod, what happens? Victory. With what? What great thing did Moses have that he was able to become such a great leader, that even throughout the world to this day, in multiple religions, in multiple belief systems, people know who Moses is. It was not some elaborate weapon or money or power. It was a rod. And he would take that rod, he would lead the children of Israel. 40 days later, they're going to go in across the Jordan into the river, across the river to Canaan. He became a great leader. He would lead them along that journey, putting up with all their griping and complaining. And ultimately, he would prepare them for conquest. Now, because of his own actions, he would not cross over, but he would view it from the mountain and see them go into the land of Canaan. He became a great writer. He wrote the book that we're reading, Exodus. He wrote Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, often called the Law, the Pentateuch, the Torah. He wrote these books. Again, that shows God was speaking to him, and they were inspired books. But he's honored in many other ways. In Matthew chapter 17 and verse 3, he is there at Transfiguration. When Jesus is transfigured before the disciples' face, he's there with Elijah. You have the law, you have the prophets, and you have Christ. And God says to the people listening, "This is my beloved Son in whom I'm well pleased. Hear ye him." Moses did his job, but that's over with. The prophets, they did their job. That's over with. Now there's a new law, a new covenant that's put in place through Jesus Christ when he died on the cross. Hear ye him. Hear ye him. He's also honored in several places. Deuteronomy 34, 10 through 12. He's honored above all the other prophets. And in chapter 18, verses 18 and 19, it is said that there would be a great leader who would come, who would be like unto Moses. And the great prophet that would come, that would be like unto Moses, is Jesus Christ, the Son of God. In John 1, 45, Philip tells Nathanael, "We have found him. We found the great prophet. His name's Jesus." There's many lessons we can learn from Moses, but the one I wanted you to hear tonight is this. There is something you can do for God, and it doesn't take some great thing. If we think we got to be where Moses once was before we do something, we need to read this book again. Because when he had it all, he wasn't capable of doing what God asked him to do. When he was wandering in the wilderness, and all he had was a rod, God was able to use him to lead his people. What's in your hand? What's in your hand? What do you have at your disposal today to make a difference in the church, in Odessa, in Texas, in the United States, in the world? What's in your hand? What ability do you have to impact the world for what's good? You know, Moses used a rod. In a few weeks, we're going to see David use a sling and some stones and kill Goliath. When we get to the New Testament next year sometime, we're going to see James and John and Peter and Andrew use their ability as fishermen to become fishers of men. There are many things that we can do to impact the world for Jesus, but it starts by taking what's in your hand and making a difference with the people that are close by. Oftentimes we're looking for some elaborate thing, some great thing, some huge thing. And the truth is, you got to start where you are. You got to tell them who sent you. You got to tell them the message that he sent and explain to them who Jesus is. That's our job. So as we end here this evening, let's ask this question. What's in your hand? And what are you doing with it? This evening, if you're not a child of God, you need to become one. The only way to do that is to obey the gospel that Christ has laid forth for us. We want you to become a child of God. And if we can help you with that, let us know. If you're already a member of the Lord's church, but you're not living like you should, you need to repent. You need to change your life and get back to doing what God would have you do. If we can help you with either one of those things, we want to help you tonight. We're not promised another day, so if there's an opportunity for us to help your spiritual journey, let's do that. Won't you come right now while we stand and while we sing?